I think the gospel is the parable of the sower, right?
Yeah.
In Matthew 13, happily a text. And then the explanation thereof, yeah. So, and there's obvious parallels with the language of God's word being compared to seed that grows and so forth. So Matthew 13, the 1-8, I believe, and then
9 and then 18.
Yeah, and then the explanation 18-23. Maybe just a word, brief word about the parables of the reign of God or the kingdom. It sort of doesn't start off that way, the way the rest of the parables in chapter 13 do. But I think everyone agrees that the sower is kind of the lead parable about the reign or the kingdom of God. I think Dr. Veltz's hermeneutics text makes a very important fundamental point. That is that the parables are the kingdom, so to speak, are revelatory. They are in the business of revealing often the unexpected nature of the reign of God in Jesus and explaining why things are going the way they are. So in that sense, they're more about God than they are about us. And I think that's an important point to make. In the context here in Matthew 13, maybe one observation that's helpful with regard to the sower is that beginning with chapter 11, the ministry of Jesus has started to go south, so to speak, not literally south yet to Jerusalem, but the opposition to Jesus is rising. John the Baptist is about to have his head chopped off, chapter 14. And so the sower, in a sense, is an odd story because, you know, the promise of Isaiah is that the word, you know, bears fruit. And the message of the sower is most of the seed doesn't come up and bear fruit. Now that which does, right, really bears fruit in an extraordinary way. This is the reign of God. God has broken into history in Jesus. He is reigning, but it's an odd kind of reign in that a sower doesn't normally. That's the other point to make about Jesus' parables is they're not ordinary stories. Most of them have extravagant or unusual or unexpected elements. So ancient Near Eastern sowers did not fling seed everywhere willy-nilly, right? Nobody does that. A path is per, you know, they don't say, oh, there's a path, I think I'll throw seed on that.
See what happens.
Yeah, they don't do that. See, they throw it into tilled fields, right? Just like everybody else does. But the reign of God is like that. That's the point, is that it's unusual. So, all right, well, let's just kind of march through it here. Chapter 13, verse 1. In that day, participle going out from ex erchomai, Jesus, going out of the house, ekatheta. Here's an imperfect from kathemai. He began to sit by the sea. And get the subject in verse 2, achloi poloi, many crowds were gathered to him, or sometimes this synago in the passive can just mean to gather intransitively, and maybe take it that way, many crowds gathered to him, hosta here with an infinitive, with the result that auton, he, the subject of the infinitive, which we haven't gotten to yet, with the result that he, after getting into a boat, kathestai, was sitting, and pas ha'akos, all the crowd, upon the, now this is a great Greek vocabulary word, aigialas. Now why in the world would you know what this means? Answer, it occurs in the Gospels. It means shore. So I feel very proud of myself that I know what aigialas means. That's because it's here, and it means shore. He was, and the crowd was standing, hesteke, this is the perfect of histemi, of all things. And in the perfect, it has a it has an imperfect, intransitive sense. You can look that up later. Was standing, right? The whole crowd was standing on the aigialos. Right? Verse 3, and he spoke to them many things in or by means of parables, as he was saying, Idu, look, the sowing guy, hasperon, ex Aelton went out from ex Erchomai to Spayrain, this purpose, in order to sow. Verse 4, and ento Spayrain auton, Here's an articular infinitive after the preposition. Temporal force in the New Testament, en to plus the infinitive is often temporal. And while he was sowing, or literally, while him to sow, and now we have, it's a little bit awkward, we have a men, and then a de in verse 5, and then another de in verse 7, so it's kind of a long string of things. But the sense is, it's a little awkward, but the sense is tolerably clear. And while he was sowing, the things which, on the one hand, fell by the way, and after they came, the birds devoured them. Verse 5, now we have a da after that men. So it's not on the one hand, on the other, it's just a series, it's a string of items. Now, if you're a little sleepy or not paying attention, the verse word in verse 5 you might think is a conjunction, Allah. But it's not but. It's Allah. It's from Allahs, other. And it's the neuter plural accusative of the adjective other. Nominative because it's the subject of the verb episent from pipto. And others fell upon the rocky place where uk aken, this is a little bit of an odd form. Aken is the imperfect of echo, right? Where it did not have a lot of dirt, gain polain. And immediately, ex anateloed, it rose up, diatamein ekein bathas geis, because it not to have deep soil. Okay. I'm not a farmer person. Bill, you like crepe myrtles. I'm told that when you have shallow soil, the thing heats up, you know, and that causes rapid growth initially. And maybe that's what's going on because dia ta plus the infinitive expresses cause. So we'll just take it that way. Now we have a genitive absolute, which makes everybody happy. Heliu is from helios, means sun. And after the sun had gone up, it was scorched, ekaumatiste, and here we have dia ta plus the infinitive again, because it did not have root, ex aranthe, this is from ex arino, which means to wither. It's from xerino, that's what it's from, and it was withered. So it doesn't turn out very well. Verse 7. And others fell upon the thorns, and let's see, the thorns on Ebason, they went up and epnixa auta. This is from pnigo, which means to choke, which is another great word that you know. And you know this because it's in the parable of the unforgiving servant, where the guy chokes. See, isn't this great? You get seashore and choking. So this is a good vocabulary lesson. And if you know those words, your board of elders will give you a raise. At verse 8, and others fell upon the earth, the noble one. So on the good earth. And edidu, imperfect of didomi, and it began to give fruit. Now we have ha, man, ha, de, ha, de. And again, a series. 100, and then 60 and 30, which I'm told is a well-nigh miraculously productive harvest in the ancient Near East. 100, 60, and 30. Verse 9, ha ekon ota akueto, the one who is having ears, let him hear. End of story. Right. Now, of course, the difficulty with the parables is you kind of say, vas is das? You know, what does this mean? Well, happily, as we all know, Jesus tells us what this one means. So this is a good one to preach on. So let's jump to verse 18. And we'll skip, actually there's a very important theology in 10 to 17, but we won't do that one because it's not part of the pericope. Humes, you, therefore, akusata, hear the parable of the sowing guy. Verse 19. While everyone hears the word of the rain and does not understand, or when everyone hears the word of the rain and does not understand from sin iemi, the evil guy, that's Satan, Irkitai, comes, and he harpatos, he snatches the having been sown thing in his heart. This is the by the road having been sown one. The hard form is the very last word of verse 19, spares. This is actually the, aorist participle passive, masculine singular nominative of spero. The sixth principal part of spero is esparein. And of course it shouldn't be, and in a perfect restored new creation it won't be, because you won't have strong principal parts. But in the fallen creation, this is actually the sixth principal part of spero. Right? Jesus continues his explanation, verse 20, and the one upon the rocky place having been sown, this is the word-hearing guy, and immediately with joy receiving it. So the one who hears and receives with joy, so a new convert, right? Verse 21, uk ehe deh, so take the deh and put it in the front, but he does not have root in himself. Rather, Allah, temporary he is. Genamenes de thlipsaos. Thlipsis is tribulation here, and the participle, the genitive absolute. And after tribulation has come, or persecution, diaton lagan, because of the word, immediately he is caused to stumble. A good example of a strong meaning for skandalizo, in this case, apostatize. Verse 22. And the having been sown into the thorns guy, this is the one who hears the word, and the worry of the age, and the deceit of riches, hey, apate tu pletu, simpnige tan lagan, together choke the word, and akarpas, unfruitful it becomes. Verse 23, and the one having been sown upon the good earth, this is the one who hears and understands the word. Two participles there, governed by one article. Indeed, de is just a little intensifying particle there. Who indeed, carpophore, bears fruit from carpophoreo. We actually had this in Romans 7 last Sunday. I guess by the time this is online, two Sundays ago. Kai poye, there's a happy form from poyeo. You see the epsilon contract with the circumflex there. And he does which on the one hand 100, and which 60, and which 30. So, end of the parable. So Jesus explains how it goes with the different people who hear the message of the reign of God. Right? That many never become fruitful. Now, I've heard this parable preached like this before, that, well, each one of us has different kinds of soil in us, right? And so at one time we're this kind of soil, one time we're that kind of soil, and so forth and so on. That strikes me as being a theologically true statement, but it's not what the parable's about. See, the parable is, in the first place, to be sort of grim about it, explaining why it's not going that great in Israel, right? Why, in the pericope immediately before this parable, Jesus' own family aren't his disciples. Right? That's what it's about. See? And so you have to ask the question, what is the intended impact of the parable? When things seem to be out of control and it's not necessarily going all that great. Well, there could be a number of things that the parable is trying to do. At the very least, I think it's trying to assert that God has not lost control. He knows precisely what he's doing in Jesus. And so therefore, we are simply called to trust the kind of reign of God that God has decided to reign. Right? Now, you could take that and apply it in different ways, you know, to a quote-unquote successful parish situation. You could use that to say, you know, we've got our plans and they seem to be working well, but you know what? If things are working well, it's not our plan. You know, you could take that approach to a congregation that's struggling or to people that are feeling defeated. You know, you could use this message of the reign of God in Jesus to say, look, he hasn't forgotten us. He's not abandoned us. He's still at work because his word is still here. So again, you could take that theology and apply it in any number of different ways, but that's the message, is that look, you may not like it or you may like it, but this is what it's like when God is reigning in Jesus. And then, you know, the pastor and the Bible study leader can take that and apply it in different ways. So, but it's probably not valid exegetically to say, okay, in me there's good soil and rocky soil and thorny soil and so forth. I mean, theologically that's obviously true, because we're all still jerks half the time. But and that's actually the latter half of Romans 7. The good that I've... Do we read that this year? Or do we... I think we skip right to Romans 8 now, don't we? Because we did Romans 7, 1 to 13 last Sunday. So, because I know I had to preach on it. See, people only think I preach on Matthew. And whenever possible, that is what I do. But okay, we got like a minute or two. Thoughts or questions about the parable of sower? Greek theology, anything? Bill, you're going to say something.
Well, yeah, it's I think that it's important, at Concordia Seminary to hear the message of, most pastors will not be uniformly successful.
Right.
The thing is that it is a struggle out there, and pastors and people need to be ready to to keep trusting the God they don't see,
right,
as the reign of that God is not just right out there, and you can't kind of keep, you just look for the successes and stuff,
right,
like that.
You have
to be willing to cope with the hard stuff,
the apparent failures,
right.
But, as Isaiah said, the Word does accomplish what God sent it to do. It's just that we can't always see it.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. So it's obviously not an excuse for laziness or failure to work or something like that, but the danger of sort of thinking that we're actually in charge and we can always tell what's going on is an equally great danger. So, yeah. Very good. Well, thank you very much.